ladies and gentlemen, we've got a special treat for you here today. This is the 11th installment of the Kerr's Wind podcast. On it today, we have David Hartwell. He is the Vice President of Sales and Asset Care and Wind at mCloud Technologies. David, thanks for being on the show.
Hello, Dan. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. It took some time to coordinate. I think both of us had some scheduling hiccups here and there, but I'm very excited, and so is a lot of our customers and people who tune into the show to have you on. So if you don't mind, we're going to dive right into it.
Yep. Yeah, getting together was a little bit of a challenge, but in today's world, we're all used to that, right?
Absolutely. And just for the audience to know, if you're listening far into the future, we're 3.5 months into COVID and the quarantines and lockdowns. So I've grown out a quarantine mustache, haven't got a haircut in probably 2 months. I apologize for the look. David, you yourself, you're looking cleaned up. How's the COVID situation been treating you?
Yeah, so I had the COVID-19 beard going on for quite some time. And I want to say a few weeks ago, I offed it. And it's been challenging. And now that we're starting to turn the corner, per se, let's hope, it was time for it to come off and kind of get after it again, so.
Right. Yeah, we're hoping that we can get out and about, visit customers. And we're going to do a deep dive, David, into mCloud. And your guys is focused on wind, especially. But first, I want to start with you. Could you give me a quick rundown just about your background? How'd you end up at mCloud? What's your education? You have a pretty fascinating career prior to wind in patient care. So do you mind just touching up briefly on kind of your background and expertise?
Yeah, so you're right. It's very diverse, and I've had a lot of different opportunities and different roles throughout my career. As far as education, I've got a business degree. I went to college out in Utah, which was a fun experience. But I spent my younger years growing up in the New England area. After college, I got a job working with Makita Power Tools. I had, when I was growing up, I had done some work over the years with a custom home developer and contractor and built houses in the summers and when I would come home from college. So that was a fitting job for me to get into. And all of my career, I've been in sales and business development and a little bit of marketing. From there, I got into a couple other opportunities. But for the majority of my career, I spent in the medical device industry. I spent 17 years in healthcare. And then when healthcare kind of started taking a turn with Obamacare and such, I found it, I had a need to get out and explore other opportunities outside of healthcare, which led me to a company that I work for selling components, specifically custom engineered and designed seals. And my responsibility there was in wind energy. And oil and gas, specifically offshore subsea oil and gas platforms. And from there, I came across this opportunity at mCloud Technologies to get into the software as a service performance analytics opportunity. And that's kind of how I made my way to mCloud. I'll tell you, when I got to System Seals and took on wind as a responsibility, I quickly grew passionate about the renewable energy business and wind specifically. So that's why my next career change was in wind.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you hit on healthcare, and I definitely want to talk about the parallels of healthcare and asset care that mCloud and you really coined as a company. But first, I want to talk about mCloud specifically and that term asset care. Can you give me just a high level overview of what asset care means for Wind at mCloud?
Yeah, so it's interesting you bring up the point, Dan, of my background in healthcare and medical device with what I do now and asset care. So the term asset care is actually comes from kind of the way healthcare operates. So, you know, in healthcare, when unfortunately a patient is dealing with some sort of an acute or even a chronic situation like a cancer of some sort, there's usually a team of physicians that get together and they meet, right? They meet daily, weekly, monthly in some cases, and they kind of discuss the case in hand and the patient and what's going on with the patient and where each one of their roles comes into play and everybody being coordinated, right? And collaborating on the same effort. And that's to manage that patient's care path, progress, and ultimately getting them to a positive outcome. That's really, you know, where asset care came from. You know, when you're dealing with an asset and you're trying to manage it, we like to look at it as, you know, we're all a team of people focused on this asset and trying to determine, you know, what's the best way to operate that asset. What's, are we doing everything we can to get to the desired outcome? So that's kind of where the asset care term comes from.
That's a great overview. And I love how you touched on patient care. And the outcomes, obviously, is positive health. You want somebody to be healthy, well-being. You know, everything needs to be all encapsulated in their health, whatever that might be, mental health, you know, physical health. What outcomes then, when you apply asset care, patient care to Wind, what outcomes are you looking for? Is it quantifying revenue produced? Is it return to service time? You know, what are you guys really tracking and how does this asset care really tie into that?
Yeah, so basically asset care is the center of what we do. And we have what we call the circle of care around asset care. One aspect of that is using AI-driven analytics to do blade inspections on a wind turbine. The other is using metrics like energy-based availability and annual energy performance, AEP, and looking at using AI, IoT, and different types of machine learning to apply to these assets with the ultimate goal of, you know, efficiency, better way of managing your O&M strategy, and ultimately, you know, providing additional revenue streams and getting the most energy output out of that asset as you possibly can.
So basically, it's tying in the output as well as the bottom line, energy production. You're looking at that. You mentioned the circle of care. It's basically measuring the outcomes of, are our turbines online? If they are online, how much revenue are they producing? Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Could you also then, maybe the example, and we've talked extensively about this offline, about your AI and blade damage being able to be inspected through autonomous drones. It's really fascinating. You can talk way better than I can about it, so I definitely am not doing it justice. Could you use that as an example of what you guys are looking at? How are you aggregating data on blade damage, and how do you guys really quantify that impact for a particular customer's bottom line?
Yeah, so with the AI and the blade inspection management platform solution that that we work with, you know, basically, where the AI comes in is it proves to increase efficiency of the whole process, right? From gathering the inspection data through the images, we like to use autonomous drones, through the processing of those images. That's where the AI engine really comes into play. And then through the output, by having a portal and a platform for all the different stakeholders in the blade inspection management process, from the drone operator to the project manager to the actual analyst, the human analyst interaction with the process, and then ultimately the client, the owner operator, that's going to be using the solution. We lay it out and in a platform that's easily accessible. It's a place to keep history, right? So you can build a historian of all of the inspections, all of the damages, and use that as a comparative to seeing what's changing with those blades over time, which is critical, and to help you manage the process of setting up repairs and organizing and getting that facilitated.
Right. And I'd like to do a little bit deeper dive on that, because I had the luxury of seeing a demo that you were able to put on for me. And it was fascinating, where a drone had flown up, taken some photos, uploaded those photos into a database. And then you have the human analysts as well that go through and confirm or deny different damage. Could you kind of talk about that whole process, starting with the drone, taking pictures, then also what somebody would see, a client would see within their portal?
Yeah. So it basically happens in three phases, right? So the first phase is gathering the data through sensors. And the sensors in our case is using autonomous drones instead of humans, instead of ropes or platforms per se. And this obviously cuts down on the time required during that phase. Most of the times by a factor of up to 6 to 8 times, and the cost difference being 8 to 10 times. And at the same time, it helps reduce, the required manpower and resources. It reduces the safety hazards, which all encompasses saving costs, right? And avoiding unnecessary costs. So that's the first phase. The second phase, which is the analyzing phase, obviously you can do that either manually, which a lot of people are still doing, or automatically. And in our case, automatically means using an AI engine that quickly takes the ingested images and processes them. Using, cutting edge machine learning models that we constantly tweak and that we build through the machine learning process. The whole automation of that process, from the manual to the AI, is where we really shine. We build and deploy custom inspection models, which identify and categorize the different kinds of faults that happen, and with a high amount of accuracy and speed as compared to manually, right? Manually, these guys, it takes them a significant amount of time to go through one wind turbine. And our models are capable of analyzing images, at a rate of 2 to 5 wind turbines a minute, which you can cover an entire wind farm in hours. And the same analysis by doing it manually would take days.
Wow. So you guys are being able to, it's basically AI driven, right? You talked about machine learning. So the drone flies up, it's able to take full snapshots of each individual access, each
autonomously.
Autonomously. So nobody is manning this drone. Is that correct?
Correct. And I'm sorry, I should have backed up and explained that process. But in that process, basically, there is a pilot that goes out. But this pilot will not be a stick pilot. This pilot will be out to fly the drone up to get oriented with the wind turbine, right? Because there's so many. And it gets oriented with the blades, and then the pilot presses the button, and autonomously the drone flies that turbine in no time at all. All four sides of the blade capturing high quality images. Typically, we get about 400 to 500 images per turbine.
And then are you guys able to, I've seen a little bit of this in the demo, but are you able to then immediately upload that into a database? And then how are you crunching those and processing those data points and images? You mentioned having a human analyst and the machine learning engine behind it, but I kind of want you to talk about the marriage between the two as well, because I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah, so to answer the first question, the processing part of it, it's not real time. We haven't gotten there yet. So what it is once the pilot's done for the day, he will upload all of the images, which obviously are identified by turbine, by site, by overlying organization, and uploads them into the cloud, right? So we're all cloud-based. And when they get uploaded into the cloud, in a matter of minutes, they are all processed with about 98% confidence in the analysis accuracy. During that processing time, it automatically flags anomalies. It's generating a single high resolution mosaic from each blade, of hundreds of these images and captured photos. It can do this from multiple sources as well. So
that is incredible. And then do you mind touching on, now you have this mosaic of pictures. Talk about how the processing, the data is able to be identified when it comes to the blade damage and how you guys confirm and categorize that severity of damage.
Yeah. So the AI engine is trained using neural networks to automatically each and every image, like I said before, on four sides of the blade, it automatically classifies and scores any damage that it finds. And it does that by, putting a scoring frame around the suspected damage and automatically classifies it. Now, with all AI, right, it's not replacing 100% human interaction. So we do have a team of analysts that will go in after the fact. They'll get triggered to say, okay, this job is done. You need to go in and do QA on these inspections, and our analysts will go in and again in such a short amount of time as compared to them having to sit down and go through each and every image manually. Now they sit down and everything's on a dashboard in front of them and already scored, and all they have to do is go through and confirm, yes, this is a severity level 1 or severity level 3 or 5 or and it will not only just score the severity level, it will tell you what type of damage it is. So if it's a delamination, if it's leading edge erosion, if it's bugs, lightning strike, what have you, it has everything completed, and all our analysts or the customer has the choice of using their analyst. All they have to do is go in and quickly scan through, confirm what's there, and if they disagree with something, they change it. So then the final report is highly accurate and completed and been touched by the AI, which obviously makes things super efficient, super fast, super accurate, and then also touched by a human analyst as well.
That is excellent. And that's a great overview, David. And I'm glad that you took a deep dive into that. And I kind of want to talk a little bit more about just quantifying that impact. What does speed do for your clients when you're able to get them a report with 98% plus confidence and accuracy? What does that speed do or enable them to do on site because you're delivering that so quickly to their desk?
Yeah. So obviously blades, when there's a structural issue or a high level severity scoring on a blade, it can be catastrophic, right? So it's critical that when these inspections are set into motion, that our clients have quick, ready access to the results. Just like in back to healthcare, just like in healthcare, right? You go and get tested for something, have a blood test or some sort of an X-ray or a scan. It's like an inspection on you being the asset, and you want to know those results ASAP so you can quickly react in the appropriate amount of time and the with the appropriate prescription and have the appropriate diagnosis so that you can get better before things become really problematic.
Right. So it sounds like this speed can really help prevent catastrophic blade damage, which can really truly be catastrophic for sites.
Yes. And it also helps them with, managing their workflow as far as, getting repairs done. And we've seen in some instances where, there's a repair team out there and, we're flying sorties, and the speed that we can generate these reports and get back to our clients, why that blade, repair company is on site, we're already delivering the results, and they can go ahead and act, and why they're on site, have them move to another turbine and start repairs instead of when you do it manually, waiting 3-4 weeks, sometimes longer, to get reports back to make an efficient decision.
Right. And it sounds like just from a cost-saving standpoint, with the speed at which you can deliver these reports could be massive for different clients. And that's really a point that I want to hammer in here, is having that delivery of not only a fast report, but also the accuracy of the report can help them. In the perfect example that you just laid out, there's a blade repair team on site. Hey, we've got a level 4 delamination on this blade. Please take care of it quickly. That could have saved them a catastrophic failure within the next couple weeks or months. So I think that's super important. And there's another portion to this from a profitability standpoint as an owner operator that I wanted to just briefly touch on, which is the power curve loss with blade damage. So we don't have to go too deep into it, because I'm certainly not an engineer. I don't understand power curves like somebody else would, but what does damage to a blade do to the overall output and revenue that a site can generate?
That's a great question, Dan. And that's something that we are currently taking a deeper dive into, trying to correlate what's happening on a blade with how that's impacting the output of the wind turbine, how it's impacting the power curve, which is impacting energy production. And that's something today that's I think on the forefront of everybody's minds, is how do we correlate what's happening with the blade? Let's use leading edge erosion as an example. That starts off as being noticeable, and then over time it's getting worse and worse and worse. And not to bring healthcare back into it, but I attribute blade erosion and degradation of blades to osteoporosis of a bone, which is something I used to deal with in my career. And, it starts off very, very unnoticeable. And then as time goes on, the bone progressively degradates and gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And this causes eventually the bone to break. And obviously it's a never-ending downward spiral, as we used to call it. So I think in blade assessment and having a blade historian to watch how things are progressing over time is going to be critical and important to not allowing that downward spiral of that blade to happen, or the downward spiral of the power curve. or the energy output, because as those blades continue to deteriorate, they're negatively impacting your power output of the wind turbine, which, let's not kid ourselves, that's money, right? That's opportunity.
Right, money and also power generation. So people's homes, right. Commercial buildings as well. It's right. It's a right. Multifaceted equation. I think that you hit on a great point. Since you've been so great with the healthcare analogies, I'll throw one out there for you, if that's all right.
Yeah.
So let's say the blades are arms, right? Or let's say limbs, and the blades are osteoporosis, leading edge degradation. We're able to catch that with this particular technology. What other parts or systems within a wind turbine can we also monitor? You know, similar to like monitoring your heartbeat or your breathing capacity. I'm not a healthcare guy, so forgive me, but those other systems, can this tech translate into other parts and components within the wind turbine?
Yeah, absolutely. So we use AI and machine learning in our asset care performance analytics and condition monitoring solutions. And, you know, to your point, that involves looking at the wind turbine from a different perspective. And again, we like to take a deeper dive and really get into like a more holistic approach, a systems level approach, where we, when we're looking at performance analytics, we're really diving deep into the subcomponents. You know, what's going on with, pitch motors, and heat, what's going on when the pitch motor is getting so hot, it's signaling an alarm. And then all of a sudden that alarm gets shut off. And, you know, instead of us just monitoring, and analyzing what's happening today and trying to, fix it today, we're looking more at what the root cause is and what's driving some of these alarms to go off these signals, because every time that happens, you know, again, you're affecting the output of the wind turbine, and you know, curtailments happen unnecessarily, and these are things that we really like to take a deeper dive on and focus on. At every level, you know, at the machine level, at the farm level, at the market level. And we pride ourselves on being agile. We're a smaller company. You know, we're not a big OEM that has, you know, huge analytics and huge big data science. That's all needed, don't get me wrong. And that all plays into what we do. But we pride ourselves on really taking a different approach and taking a deeper dive into what's really going on.
I would agree 100%. I think, you know, we've kind of joked about it this whole podcast, but equating your wind turbine to a patient in healthcare, I think that is a wonderful mindset approach to managing a site. You know, I think over the years in wind, as I've seen it in my very short career in wind, people are starting to understand, well, hey, if I just fix what's broken, am I actually treating the root causes, as you just mentioned, David? You know, and they're starting to shift the mindset from, okay, a bearing went bad on this motor, let's replace the bearing. Instead, it's what caused, what system or what up or downstream effect caused this bearing to fail? And how can we holistically approach this to find a permanent solution? So I think you guys are really paving the way in the forefront of approaching wind in a completely different light, similar to healthcare or patient care. And I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, big data is in healthcare and has been for many years now. And you're right, it's very simple. I mean, in healthcare, they use diagnostics, they use preventative medicine with analytics. They, you know, all looking for cost reduction and reduction of adverse events, right? And adverse situations. And they're trying to find the best care path for their patients. You know, everything's about preventative and prescriptive. And that's just like a wind turbine. It's just like asset management. And another big thing in healthcare, sorry to drag this out, but healthcare is all about population health, right? And if you're trying to figure out population health and how that is impacting down to each individual person, or how it's impacting hospitals and insurance payers, you need analytics to do that. And that's the same thing for wind, right? Think of population health as an owner operator's entire fleet. That's the population. And what can we learn from what's going on, at one wind farm, and compare that to another, or, you know, the same turbine manufacturer and, output on one wind farm? How does that compare against, one at a different wind farm? And then organizationally wide, how are we managing that? And how are we utilizing the data from one to help another?
That is fascinating. That is absolutely fascinating. And this will prompt my last question before we go to the rapid fire round. Sure. Do you think we'll ever get to a point in wind where we can basically with 100% accuracy predict a failure before it happens, whether it's a pitch motor in your example, or maybe it's a slip ring, a gearbox, any of that? Do you think we'll get to that point?
With 100% accuracy? That's hard to say. That's the goal, right? And everybody's working and collaborating toward that goal. And it's a good goal to have, right? You got to have something to look toward and something to think about. That's where I want to go. And that's the desired outcome that I want. And I think that's where that comes into play when it comes to, big data and AI and machine learning. The key is, what we have today and what we see today, we always want to be better tomorrow. Right. And if we always keep that goal in mind, that's basically what we're attempting to do and learn from that when we apply AI and machine learning and big data analytics to these assets. To answer that question, I really, I don't think with 100% accuracy, we'll ever be there, because there's always the opportunity for someone to deviate from the plan. Not purposely, but there'll always be some sort of human interaction with this process, and we're not perfect, so.
Right. It was a tough question. I apologize for that, but I think you fielded it wonderfully. And I do think the goal is trying to reach 100% accuracy, but even if we get 80% of the way there, think of what that does for the sites, not only from a bottom line standpoint, a profitability standpoint, but also safety. We have guys climbing towers. You don't want them to have any excess risk exposure when they're up tower working on these turbines, and even down to individual parts. How do we upgrade these parts and components to make sure that they're lasting the life of the turbine, or at least that having that be the forefront and the goal in mind? So I think that's a wonderful overview, David. We've done a lot here with mCloud. Now we're going to move into the rapid fire round, if you're ready.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for having me. And good. I appreciate it.
So we got four or five questions, rapid fire. I typically ask people non-wind, just saying, hey, I've got somebody in wind, really, really, obviously you're a VP, you've worked your way up in multiple industries. Like, what do you want to learn from this person? And then I'll also throw in my questions, because I selfishly want to know certain things about you. So the first question that I got was, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career that you've learned throughout your time as somebody working as a professional?
I'd say, if I had to give somebody some advice on, what I wish, I had learned, it's funny. I wish that I had learned early on to push learning, right, and continuously learn. I think it's critical for anyone in any career to constantly be learning and challenging themselves and surrounding themselves with better people. Throughout my career, I've always looked at organizations that I was considering joining, and I wanted to be sure that the people that I was going to be surrounded with were 10 times better than me, simply for learning. And as far as what somebody would have told me, I guess, is I guess that the law of diminishing returns, you know, exists when you focus solely on sales execution. You know, we always get caught up in the day-to-day pressures of sales performance, and especially, you know, in today's times, and quota attainment and, you know, revenue. We really rarely ever get time to stop and think about our own self-development and learning, for that matter. So that's what I wish someone had told me early on, was to, you know, don't worry about all of those pressures, focus on learning and self-development.
I love that. I love that. I think the education aspect will eventually work itself out, because you're no longer a sales guy. You're somebody who's directly adding value to a client, a customer, whoever you're servicing, because you're so heavily informed and you know what's going to be best for them. I think that's a great answer. I'm going to throw you a curveball here. This is one that I just impromptu thought of. What's your favorite part about working in wind, or working with the wind industry?
Yeah, so what I quickly realized in wind and the industry was it's a large industry, right? If you look at it globally. But when it comes down to it, from a people standpoint, it's a very connected industry, and it's very small when it comes to, you know, people helping other people, and the passion that you see, people helping others excel in what they do, even if it's, you know, outside their organization. It's really a team approach. You know, everybody's in it for the common goal that we want to see renewable energy, per se wind, become the prominent energy producer globally. And it's hard to explain, but it's just a different group of people that are very tight-knit and connected with a common goal.
I could not agree more. You've introduced me to some people in the space, which we greatly appreciate. And everybody does seem to share that common passion. Otherwise, you're not going to make it in wind, because it is such a close-knit community. And we're all trying to move towards that singular goal of, how do we make wind as big as possible in the United States? How do we service people who want their lights to come on and have something that's energy efficient and long-term sustainable? So I think that's a great answer to that question. We had originally scheduled this podcast probably a month or two ago. And at that time, the Last Dance documentary, I'm not sure if you saw it. I sit just outside of Chicago. That's the documentary on Michael Jordan. I don't even know if you're an NBA or basketball fan, but I'm going to ask anyway. I've been a long-term LeBron James guy. I'm saying he's a physical specimen. He's the greatest of all time. I watched that documentary basically all in a night or two, and quickly realized how foolish I was to be so quick to say that LeBron was better than Michael Jordan. This might be a harder question to ask than, you know, asking about religion or politics. In your mind, David, who's the greatest basketball player of all time?
Well, you know, most would think I would say LeBron James, considering, you know, I live, I'd say, 3 miles. I drive by his house all the time here in Akron, Ohio. He lives about three and a half miles down the road from me. And but I will have to say Michael Jordan. And I say that simply because, in my mind, I feel what he contributed day in and day out, and over his career, from both an offense, and I'm talking strictly sports here, from an offensive and a defensive perspective. And if you simply look at the data and the analysis from that standpoint, hands down, it's Michael Jordan.
Wow. I like the answer. I have to agree with you. And some of my buddies that maybe listen to this podcast, I've been so big on LeBron for so long, they're going to be shocked that I said it, but I have to agree with you. But that was very, it's a lot of confidence coming from you, knowing that LeBron's basically your neighbor. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast and call you out next time you're driving by his house.
he's never there anymore, you know, so.
Right.
It's funny.
Last question for you, and this is formality of every show. Obviously, we've done a lot of digging on mCloud, on your background, the different applications and tech that you can roll out here within Wind, conflating it with, you know, asset care and patient care and healthcare, and how we can marry that into the Wind space. How can people get in touch with you, David? Do you prefer LinkedIn, email, phone calls? What I'll typically do is in the show notes be able to put all these links for people to reach out to you. So how do you like to be communicated with?
Yeah, it's fine to, you know, put my, my company email is perfect. I, you know, I'm in front of that all day, every day. And that's probably the best method, but feel free to, reach out to me on LinkedIn. If they want to learn more about, what we do, they're more than welcome, obviously, to visit our website. So yeah, feel free to put any of those in the notes.
Great. I definitely will. I've got that jotted down here. I'm also going to, with your blessing, and we could talk offline about this, share some of the asset care slides that you'd shared with me, which I think really does a great job of summarizing the vision of mCloud and you as a person trying to move forward in the Wind space. David, that was a wonderful podcast. I really do appreciate the time.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on and share my story and some insights. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This has been one of my favorite episodes, and this is episode 11 of the KERS Wind podcast. We are checking out.